It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Tuesday, July 21st, 2020, and you know what that means. It's time to get nerdy, y'all. Welcome to episode number 149 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. I am Lom, also known as Mr. Nice Guy, and I've got my comrade in gaming commentary here with me, the miggity 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 Mac, also known as Maxion. Mac, I believe we have an announcement to make today. Would you do the honors? Let's start off with that.
Yeah, so starting off with the announcement, I want to say it was a few weeks back that Mr. Nice Guy and I were approached by some very nice nice folks, some nice people over at Game Insider, right?
Correct.
Game Insider is a, you know, it's an online magazine about video games, and there's even, you know, there's even a print component, stuff like that. Anyway, point being is that they reached out and they said, hey, we want to get started by, you know, getting some podcasts and things like that going. Would you consider, you know, letting us host your content and being a part of, you know, basically a smaller Game Insider podcast network? And so we talked it over, met with the guys over there at Game Insider, and we're like, yeah, they seem pretty legit. I feel for a minute there like that's almost like death by faint praise, but I mean, like, they're legit guys. So we talked it over, and Mr. Nice Guy and I decided to go for it.
Yeah, so going forward, you will be able to find our content on their website, I believe on their YouTube, and it's kind of a cool partnership. They have really, really great articles, video game related. They have some stuff related to comics and some other things like that, so I think we're going to fit in there very well, and we're excited to be a part of that family, to be partners with them. So that's that, and please go check them out, GameInsider.com. They have some legitimate stuff, game reviews on their YouTube channel, and commentary, and all kinds of cool stuff.
Game Insider.
It is official. That's exciting. It's official.
Indeed. So anyway, as to what's gone on the last week or so, not a whole lot, except for I celebrated my 11th anniversary.
Nice. Wedding anniversary, right?
Yes, that's correct. Wedding anniversary. So
congratulations, yeah. Man. That's awesome.
Thanks. It's crazy how time flies.
Yeah, and I have legitimately nothing that can top that, so I'm not even going to try. Not that we try to one-up each other, but I have no interesting stories this past week. Hashtag quarantine 2020. So, Mac, on that note, I say we do what we do best and hop right into the video game news. What do you think about that, my friend?
Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, this is episode number 149 of Two Nerds in a Pod. Episode number 149. Let's get into the gaming news. Let's first talk about Xbox, because we got a lot of Xbox news this week. This first story comes from GameSpot.com by Jeremy Winslow. It says, in partnership with the Summer Game Fest, Xbox's Summer Demo event is now live on Xbox One. From now until July 27th, you can check out over 70 available demos of unreleased Xbox One games from the comfort of your home. Now, Mac, here's the kicker. These downloadable Xbox One demos aren't the normal demos players have come to understand. Instead of being a polished vertical slice of an upcoming soon-to-be-released game, the demos are more akin to showroom floor demos, those that appear on trade show conventions and events. In other words, these demos are not necessarily indicative of the game's final full release. So, Mac, as a guy who is a fan of the playable demo, and for you it's a necessity when you're thinking about buying a game, what do you think about Xbox putting out 70 of these things, giving people, what, a week to try them, and trying to sell games that way? Is it too much? Is it a bad idea for unpolished games to be put out this soon? What do you think?
Well, so if I'm understanding properly, these are games that that Microsoft's trying to sell, but they are already, like, in development with the backing of Microsoft
Studio? That's my understanding, is that these are games that are likely going to be released, but they are not yet released, and they're giving people a taste of what is to come. That's my understanding.
Gotcha. Well, I will say that I think the big thing for me, like I said, is if you're asking for my money so that you can develop it, yes, I want to see a playable demo. But, you know, in this case, if they've already got backing, then the demo's just kind of a plus. Unless, of course, they're doing this kind of like how Amazon did The Tick and a few of those other Amazon Prime originals, where they tested the waters by producing a pilot, putting it there, and telling people to vote on what they wanted, and then produced the stuff that people seemed to like. If that's the case, then, I mean, I'm glad that people will get a chance to have a demo. But, you know, I mean, overall, I don't see much of any way that there are losers in this scenario. You know what I mean?
Well, the only way that I see there being losers is that there are 70 games here. So unless you had heard of some of these in advance, what are you going to do? Just look through the 70 games. If there's a preview video, I guess you check that out. You download it, you play it, you see if you like it. There's no way you can get through all of these. Now, to be fair, the article goes on to say that there are some highly anticipated games featured, including Genesis Noir, Haven, and by Fury, developer The Game Bakers, Christ Tales, and more. But, I mean, I don't know about any of these games, and so I'm not going to go through and try to find a good game demo of something that I already know is not going to be polished, right? It's not going to be indicative of the final product. Now, remember when we went to GameStop Expo, they had Mighty No. 9 on the show floor. And from what I remember, that demo was pretty close to what the game was going to be like. So to me, that's what a game demo should be. You know, don't put something out just for the sake of putting it out alongside 69 of its peers and expect people to find it and get excited for it. You know, put out a few of these that are really well polished and allow the community to try them. That's how I would have done it, but to each their own. Moving on to the next news story, let's talk Nintendo, Mac. Your favorite company.
The greatest company that's never disappointed me or anyone else.
Yeah, according to Mac, they never have overpromised or underdelivered. This is from IGN.com by Jordan Oleman. The first Nintendo Direct Mini Partner Showcase has been broadcast. You can watch it in full online and check out the announcements below. Now, here's the four announcements that they made in this Mini Direct, Mac, and I don't think any of these are going to blow you away. Cadence of Hyrule, Rogue Company, which we will talk about later, WWE 2K Battlegrounds, and Shin Megami Tensei 3, Nocturne HD Remaster, and Shin Megami Tensei 5. So Mac, Nintendo did this mini direct, no blockbuster announcements, nothing that got anyone excited. Are people just doing digital events at this point to stay relevant during coronavirus? I can't see any other reason why Nintendo would do this.
Perhaps. Wasn't Cadence of Hyrule already released?
Correct, but this is some DLC. So Cadence of Hyrule was
DLC.
Out. Yeah, they announced that it's getting three DLC packs. I should have specified that.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's nice to know about the DLC.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, maybe it's an effort to... Because when was the last Nintendo Direct that they did? Was it about a month ago?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I feel like they did a Pokemon one not too long ago, and then they did probably another one a month or two ago, yeah.
Gotcha. I wonder if they're trying to make a sort of monthly schedule and try to find something. And it's possible that this might have just been a lean month as far as things that they could show off.
And that's my thing is, if you don't have anything to say, don't say anything. And that's kind of my approach to social media and to life in general. Like, if I don't have something to tweet, you're not going to see me on Twitter, right? If Nintendo or any game company doesn't have announcements to make that are important, just don't make announcements. Nintendo Switch has some of the best games of any console right now as far as exclusives go. They don't need to impress us with just a digital event for no reason. Cadence of Hyrule is what, a $20 game that I don't think has that big of a following, and I don't think anyone is chomping at the bit for this DLC. So, I mean, just tweet that out, just let us know, and then make it available. That's all you have to do. Rogue Company, which we will talk about later, is not a Nintendo exclusive. It's available on all of the consoles and PC. So I don't see any reason why this needed to happen. People are waiting for Pokemon news, right? They're waiting for Metroid 4 news, Metroid Prime 4 news. They're waiting for stuff like that. So save the events for things like that. That's my opinion. If you disagree, let me know in the chat or tweet at me after the fact. Anything else you want to say about that, Mac?
No, I'm afraid I don't really have much input on this one, because most of the games, I mean, I've played Crypt of the Necrodancer, which is where Cadence of Hyrule comes from.
Correct.
But I mean, apart from that, yeah, that's the only input I have.
Is that game any good? It's kind of like a rhythmic game, right?
Yes. It's definitely a rhythm game, and it is very enjoyable if you're into rhythm games. I'm a fan of rhythm games, one of my favorite games of all time. A rhythm game, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I'm always all about, you know, the rhythm of the night, of course. So, you know, it's just one of those things where it was good for me, but I don't know if it'd be up your alley.
Yeah, I've never tried it, and I probably won't, but we'll see. Well, moving on to one other news story. You know, we always like to let y'all know about the free stuff that's coming. Simple enough story here by Jeremy Winslow at GameSpot.com. Rocket League is going free to play this summer. Mac, have you ever given Rocket League a shot?
I have never given Rocket League a shot.
Now, I know you don't like sports, but I know you like games, and I know you probably like sports crossover games. I feel like Rocket League might be a game you could get into, man. Because soccer, as far as sports go, there's not a lot of hits, right? It's a game that involves a lot of finesse and a lot of strategery, right? I feel like...
Or at least a lot of cringing on the ground and holding, you know, holding your leg.
Yeah, he slide tackled me, that type of cringing, exactly. So, I could see you getting into this. Bottom line, for those who have not had a chance to play it, it's going free on every platform, but here's the kicker. It's going to leave Steam... And for PC players, it instead is going to be acquired by the Epic Game Store. Or rather, it will be on the Epic Game Store, since it was acquired by them in May of 2019. So, now I know
of
Mac is...
Of course it was. So, yep, I am facepalming.
For those of you who may be listening for the first time, just like Nintendo, just like EA, Mac is a huge fan of the Epic Game Store. Correct, Mac?
I am the biggest fan, /S.
Well, once again, Mac, the Epic Game Store is giving us a lot of free stuff. And I'm just saying, maybe it's time for you to make amends with them and enjoy this plethora of games.
Now, they know what they did.
I don't even know what they did, but I'll take your word for it. Let's keep moving on to our next news story. Now, this is one that I forgot to announce a couple weeks ago, and this is probably going to be our last news story of the week, because we've already had so much Xbox news. But the Xbox Series event is going to have a pre-show that you don't want to miss. For those of you who don't know, Microsoft's Xbox Series X Game Showcase is coming this Thursday, July 23rd, and is expected to feature Halo Infinite and some of Microsoft's other first-party titles. This is by Eddie Mackick on GameSpot. The show kicks off at 8 a.m. Pacific time with a pre-show led by games media veteran Jeff Keighley, who also does the Game Awards, many of you may know. Unlike some pre-shows that don't have much news, this one will be different, according to Xbox marketing boss Aaron Greenberg. Quote, "Trust me, you don't want to miss the pre-show," Greenberg said on Twitter. We have been working with and our partners on some exciting reveals. I think that is a typo. Mac, here's my question for you, dude. When you see an event like this, do you want more information on the hardware or on the games? Because they have said that this is going to be a game-heavy showcase.
Well, you know me. If I want hardware, I'm going to start looking at a PC. I mean, there are many good things to be said about a console, but I'm just more a PC man at heart, so the games are much more important to me if we're going to talk about one of those events. I think we can both agree that consoles, you know, they are made or broken by the games that are on them, the exclusives that they can offer. Yeah. The Nintendo Wii was an incredibly well-selling console, and it did not have the most high-definition games. It did not have the most, you know, insert quality here of games.
Or online,
of any type.
Right.
Yeah, or even online. But yet, it had good games. It had well-thought-out games, and it managed to capture people's attention in a way that the other consoles did not. So don't, you know, I mean, be careful about trying to sell only on hardware. And I think it's good that we're going to be hearing about the games, because that's what people are paying for.
Now, here's where it gets complicated to me, because I feel like to sell a console, you need the games. No one really cares about the graphics, at least not as much as they do about the software, like you just said. But in order to really sell a console, you have to tell people that you're giving them something that is a known entity, right? You have to say, listen, we're giving you a new Halo, and this is the only place you can play it. We're giving you a new Gears, whatever it may be. But Mac, what does Microsoft do? Like, to do stuff besides Halo, besides Gears of War, you know, besides Sea of Thieves, can they just say, hey, we have a new IP? Will that get people to buy it? Or are people going to be skeptical because of Microsoft's track record of having such a lack of new stuff this current gen?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it is one of the reasons why movies... and movie studios tend to make sequels is because sequels sell better.
Yeah.
And if you track video game sales, it is hard to beat a follow-up, a sequel, a continuation of a franchise. It's harder to beat that with a new IP. And, I mean, sometimes things do great. Obviously, there was no Last of Us franchise before the original Last of Us came out.
That's a
very
good point.
And it did great. So, I mean, there's always room for a new IP to just, you know, capture our hearts in ways that we could have never foreseen. But in general, there's a lot more, you know, there's a lot more inertia there on those situations where you've got a franchise and a continuation. I, for one, am always hoping for new IPs.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where I think you hit the nail on the head. Because Naughty Dog put out The Last of Us, right? And so Sony really has a good strategy there. They can come out with a new IP, but because it's made by such an iconic, well-established studio, people are going to be hyped for it. Same thing with Ghost of Tsushima. Sucker Punch put that game out. They made Infamous, those games that everyone loved, the hero games on PlayStation. So you know that it's going to be a good game. And so I feel like that's what Microsoft needs to do here. They need to come out with a new IP, but it needs to be made by a studio that has a standard of excellence that they've set in the past. And I feel like that's how they're going to succeed, because we already know we're getting Halo, right? And Halo is also going to be available on current gen. But if Microsoft can come out with something that's new, that's made by maybe not Bungie, because Bungie's not with them anymore, but some other studio that makes good stuff that people are chomping at the bit for, I feel like that's how they're going to sell this console. And that has been our news for the week.
All right. Well, now let's take a little look at some video game history. And I'm going to start back at the very beginning, a very good place to start, I'm given to understand. We're going to start with the Magnavox Odyssey.
Ooh, going old school. Love it.
Very old school. First gen home console here. So we're talking 1969, because it was yesterday, back in 1969, that the three guys responsible for making the Magnavox Odyssey, that would have been Ralph Baer, Bill Harrison, and Bill Rush, showed it off to Magnavox, who would eventually agree to distribute and produce the thing in January 1971. That's when they signed the contract, and then units started shipping in 1972. But the interesting thing is kind of the way that they went about trying to get the Magnavox Odyssey out there. They had built some prototypes. They went around showing them, trying to figure out. And remember, this is the very beginning, guys. This is 69.
Mac, 1969. Was it the summer of 69 when this happened?
Summer of 69.
I had to.
It's right. It was July of 1969. I mean, that's summer. So, heck yeah. They were going around, they were showing it to all these different people and trying to figure out what niche to work into. They tried some like electronics companies, they tried some various other things, and it was interesting because I believe it was the, according to Ralph Baer, it was the patent attorney that they worked with to patent the video game console, that he suggested, well, hey, if this is going to be something played at home, why don't you go to the television manufacturers and see if there's a TV manufacturer that will, that will sign on to this, because you're going to be using these with TVs. At the time, Magnavox was big in the TV space. They went through to a bunch of different ones. Oh, sorry, I'm mixing that up. So put that to the side real quick.
Okay.
Magnavox at first passed on it in 69, right? The summer of 69.
Okay.
And then RCA was going to go for it until one of their CEOs, well, it wasn't quite CEO, but like it was one of their board members, went from RCA to Magnavox. And when he got there, he had them come in and, you know, he kind of turned around the feeling of the rest of the people on the board at Magnavox and was just like, hey guys, no, we really need to take advantage of this. We need to go for this, produce the Odyssey. It's gonna be great. And then he convinced them to do it, which led to that January 1971 contract, and then the units finally shipping in 1972. Sorry, I had a momentary flub.
That's
on
that's okay.
Timeline.
It was a lot of info. You did great.
Thanks, Mr. Nice Guy. You're so nice. But yeah, it's strange to think that for a while there, for a couple of years, the Magnavox Odyssey, first video game console, was not only in limbo, but it was also to the point where, you know, before video game consoles were a thing, how do you actually market something like that? How do you know who to look to, who to ask? I mean, you know, we take very much for granted these questions like, oh, yeah, how do you get a console made? Well, you approach a console manufacturer, or you do this, or you start your own. But back in those days, it was very, very different. And hats off and mad props to Ralph Baer, Bill Harrison, and Bill Rush for, you know, for making the Magnavox Odyssey happen and sticking with it. A great story. Read up more about that, because there's a lot more details that I glossed over, but it's a really cool moment in history.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Another thing that happened this week in 1982 was there was a conversation between Atari and Steven Spielberg. As you all may know, in 1982, we were looking for the blockbuster release of a certain movie called E.T., the Extraterrestrial. Ouch. Yep. And as it so happened, it was this week in 1982 that Atari signed the deal to make E.T., a game that would go down in infamy. Whole loads, truckloads of...
Yep.
Cartridges being buried in the, you know, in garbage dumps in the desert, because it wasn't worth it to hold on to them. The very storage space they were taking up was, you know, was more valuable than the cartridges themselves. It was such a flop. We could talk for ages about the video game crash, but just one thing that I want to throw out there about the this deal is that as a direct result of the, you know, sort of waste of space that the that Atari for the E.T. wound up being, that led to Nintendo deciding to do their limited licensing on the games. And what I mean by that is that they only allowed you to have a license for a maximum number of games each year. So no matter how big of a company you were, no matter how many game ideas you had to theoretically come with your best ones and your best ones only, so that it could get that Nintendo seal of approval that we remember from back in those days.
It had to bring the heat. Do they still do the seal? I don't know if they do anymore. I don't think they do.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, now, to be clear, the Nintendo Seal of Approval didn't, you know, there are plenty of stinkers that are official releases on the NES, but the idea was, prompted by that, their theory, Nintendo's was that, hey, this is because you could just release any type of game out there, right? Anything that came into your mind, if you had the money, you could make it happen. And they were like, you know what, let's roll that back. And I think it's sort of an example of there are always trade-offs when you do something. And so one of the trade-offs, I think, is, you know, I think we might have missed out on some cool NES games. But, you know, we'll never know for sure. So nonetheless, it's just an interesting consequence of E.T. Last quick thing that I want to hit from 2001. This week, the Sony released their PlayStation their hard drives for the PlayStation 2 so that you could, you know, plug a hard drive into those bad boys. Naturally, this was something that was and still is exploited by people to hack and enjoy whatever they want on it. And believe it or not, I know I didn't use a PlayStation 2 for this, and I suspect most of us didn't, but one of the smaller ways in which the PlayStation 2 was marketed with regards to these, to this, was the ability to use it as a computer, basically. You could tie in a keyboard and a mouse monitor, and you could play that thing because it would run Linux. And one of the things that anybody will tell you from the old school, you know, video game hacking community is that if you can get something to run Linux, that is when that's when you, on the hacking and homebrew side, that's when you have won.
Yeah, so you can do a lot.
Yeah, it's one of those things. When the original Xbox got hacked, it was by getting it to boot some Linux, and so on and so forth. Once you can get that hurdle done, you are well on your way. Now, it was a fantastic week for video games this week, that is to say, in years before, and that's just been some video game history for you.
Awesome. Well, we'll keep things moving with our topic of the week. For those of you who are just joining, or maybe you just started listening to the pod, download it halfway through. We did announce earlier that we have joined the Game Insider Network, and this week's topic of the week comes from them. Now, one thing we want to mention, Mac, as we joined this partnership with them, nothing changes about the pod, right? We still share whatever news stories we want. We don't have exclusivity to share only stories from anywhere. But I did happen to want to share one of their stories this week for our topic of the week. This is written by Derek Smith, and it's about cross-platform shooter Rogue Company that we mentioned earlier. Here's what it says. It says, First Watch Games and Hi-Rez Studios have launched their stylish cross-platform team shooter Rogue Company to early access players worldwide on PS4, Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, and PC via, wait for it, Mac, wait for it, the Epic Games Store.
No!
But here's the thing. It's only on the Epic Games Store on PC, obviously. If you have consoles, for those of you who like Mac, don't like Epic, you can just play it through your console, downloading it through their eShop or their PlayStation or Xbox Store.
And what about those of us who don't care for the Epic Games Store and yet do not have a current-gen console?
Well, Mac, here's the thing. This is also a competitive shooter, so it's not your type of game anyway.
Oh, okay. So that's fair.
You'll be okay. But here's what it says. It says, playable with cross-play and cross-save on all platforms, which we like. We like cross-play. We like cross-save. This early version of Rogue Company gives players exclusive access to Rogue Company's energetic gameplay and third-person action movie flair before the full game launches later this year. So for those who are interested, Starter Founders Pack is $14.99 to get into the early open beta. Standard Founders Pack, $29.99, and Ultimate Founders Pack is $60. They come with different tiers of stuff. I'm not going to get into that. Mac, the reason I bring this up is not to discuss this game specifically, but to talk about the concept of a battle royale or a shooter game being released in 2020. There has never been a year in my life when we have had so much free stuff given to us in terms of games, in terms of DLC, in terms of movies that are available to stream for free, in terms of comic books that you can read online for free. We're a video game podcast, though, so I want to ask you, in 2020, what does a game need to do to stand out, to catch Maxion's eye, and to be worth your time?
Well, it would be nice if the game were in one of the styles that I liked. It would be nice if it were on a available through a platform that I enjoyed. Those are kind of the basic things that I want for something to appeal to me. But at the end of the day, I don't think that what I'm suffering from, suffering from many things, but I don't think what I'm suffering from is too many choices that
really
are of interest to me when it comes to video games. Within the subset of that, you know, of that games that are being offered for free right now, I don't think I've got too many offerings that are free for me on platforms that I enjoy and are games that I would enjoy, if that makes sense.
Interesting, because I feel the opposite way, and maybe it's because I play more shooters and I do more competitive online than you.
It's true, and you're better at all of those. You are better at first-person shooters. You are good at that stuff, and it's no surprise that, you know, that there are a lot of good things available to you in that vein.
Yeah, and like, it's gotten to the point that now my backlog has free-to-play games in it, right? Like, I can't get into Fortnite. Like, every time I hop into Fortnite, I get frustrated. But there's something about it that every 3 months or so, it draws me, and I'm like, let me play that game. And then I'm like, nope, this is why I don't play it, right? Apex Legends, I love that game. For a long time, I was streaming it almost exclusively, but I just moved on to other stuff. Now, you know, I'm playing Teamfight Tactics, not a shooter, but a free-to-play game, and I'm also playing a lot of Valorant. When we talk about what we've been watching and what we've been playing, I'm going to talk about some new releases that came out this week that I didn't even have to buy. Because they're on Xbox Game Pass, Mac. Because I have Xbox Game Pass. So for me, I'm at a point in my life where I'm very, very busy, and so are you. So when a new game comes out and it catches my eye, like, I really have to decide, is this game going to be elite? And if it's not, is it worth my time? And so here's the things that, for me, make a game worth my time, right? Longevity. Like, something that is really, really going to be supported, like an Apex Legends, like a Valorant, like a Teamfight Tactics. I need a game that I know will be supported, and I don't know that about this Rogue... what's it called? Rogue... let me pull it back up. Rogue Company game. They had a really, really good trailer for it, like cinematic trailer. So no gameplay, but just, like, really good writing, really good graphics, beautiful, well-written. And then I watched someone play it on Twitch, and I was like, okay, this looks like it's pretty legit. And you know what's interesting, Mac? Part of the reason that I didn't want to drop $15 to get the Founders Pack is, one, because I have too much to play, but also there were only about 10,000 people on Twitch watching this game. And that leads me to believe that the community is going to die. So if I put money into it, I put time into it, even if I like it, maybe in a year I'm not going to be able to play it. Is that something that ever makes you... gives you pause when you're going to buy a game, how long it'll be available?
Absolutely. I mean, I am constantly being given pause by the thought of how long will this game survive. But that being said, I'm not given pause for that because it's because I'm like, should I buy it if the game's going to disappear? I'm just given pause by my blood boiling from the very concept that I have to make that kind of decision.
Well, you know, this ties into what we talked about last week. We talked about game prices going up, potentially next gen, to $70 per game, over 60, which it's been for many, many years. And in my opinion at that time was that part of the reason people are upset about this is because we've been given too much. And because we've been conditioned to think that things are free. And I think that that's part of why I am not willing to pay $15 for a game that looks like it could be a lot of fun. I think that if I played this game for a couple months, I would have gotten $15 worth out of it. But because I've been given so much for free, because I have access to so many games through the Switch Online, through PlayStation, through PC, Epic Game Store, hashtag shout out to Epic Game Store. I don't care what Mac says about you. I got you.
Hashtag down with Epic.
Because I have access to so much stuff and my backlog is so deep, I don't want to put any money into a game that I'm not going to be able to play for a long time or that I know is a masterpiece like The Last of Us Part II. Let us know in the chat if you agree. Mac, that's what I have to say about this. Any other thoughts on this whole discussion that you have to share with the people?
You know, I have so many thoughts, but most of them are sort of that tangential thought that aren't really going to add anything to the conversation. And so, instead of offering them, I will just say, I see where you're coming from, Mr. Nice Guy. And it is a shame that... It feels like all the good stuff that we've got might be making it harder for a game like this to, you know, to really get a foothold that maybe in a different climate it would otherwise be able to get a better foothold, at least with you and people similar to you.
Yeah.
For you know, for that. But, you know, I hope it's successful. I'm glad it looked good, and I feel like I can't help but wish game companies well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And Mac, that's been our topic of the week, my man.
All right. Well, now let's turn our eyes from the topic to a little something we like to call kick or kickstart. I have posted a link in the chat so that you, those of you who are here with us live can take a look at a Kickstarter project called VR Giants. Let's discuss some of the virtues and vices and say whether or not we think it should be kicked out of here, whoop, or whether it should be kick-started. Keep your eyes open. We'll soon be asking for your input. But let me introduce you to VR Giants, a fellow by the name of Wolfgang, who is putting this game together. It actually started as a master's thesis for his project for his, obviously, master's in game development. And it is an interesting take because the game is half VR, half not VR. And the way that it accomplishes that is that this game is meant to be a co-op adventure with one person playing the giant in this game and using your VR interface and view to help position yourself so that the other player who's playing, you know, a more regular sized person can, you know, move around in the world, get to higher places. As a team, you work together to complete the puzzles. And it looks kind of cute. I mean, at the current moment, the game there, you know, Wolfgang's looking for about $11,500 to bring this game to completion. He still has 22 days to go on this project, and they're just a little bit shy of 10,000. So they're almost, you know, Wolfgang's almost definitely going to make it there. Let's see. If you are interested in a copy of the game upon release, you'd be looking at a $22 buy-in or 19 euros for those of you over in the EU. And the estimated delivery is October of 2021, so a little bit more than a year left to go in development here. Let's see. What else to say about it? It has a playable demo as part of it, so that's very cool. You can get a chance to try it out if you've got, you know, a couple of people, one person with a VR set that is, you know, that's available. Now, additionally, if you happen to have a computer that can support, you know, sort of both a controller and the VR side of things, you can play it on a single device. So you don't necessarily need to have two separate people. And I think at the current moment, obviously in the future, it'll be available for a non-local co-op experience. But I think the demo as it currently stands is only available for a local co-op experience at the moment. But it will be available on Steam, so it's going for release on PCs.
Correct.
At the current. Dude, anything you want to say about this one?
Yeah, I mean, and that makes sense, because really the only other console that they could release this on, or I should say platform, would be the PS4, since there's a PSVR. I mean, you can't have it on Switch because there's no quote-unquote real... They have the cardboard headset, but there's no real VR headset. So it's going to be limited to PC initially and then maybe PS4. I think this is brilliant. And full disclosure, this is one that I saw and I just messaged Mac. And I said, you know, you don't have to use this for the show, but I just think this is a cool idea. So you might want to check this out. And Mac, I think this is brilliant, man. Like, VR is one of those platforms that can be kind of isolating. Mm-hmm. I believe, and I've only tried it once or a couple times, but you can't really play VR in the same room with your friends unless they also have a VR headset. And so, I mean, this type of game would allow me to sit down with, you know, my wife or one of my kids, and, you know, I'm wearing the headset, they're doing the thing with the controller, and we're working cooperatively and having a lot of fun. And we talked earlier today about what can set a game apart, like what can catch your eye in today's world. And to me, this is something that has literally never been done before, at least that I've never seen done. You know, allowing two people to do something where one's wearing the headset and one's using a controller and they're playing in the same game and having fun. And so I think this is a brilliant idea. The graphics look really good. It looks almost like Super Mario-ish, you know, 3D Mario-ish. So, I mean, I think this is brilliant. I don't know what more I can say. I think the price point is right on point. $20 or so is right in line with what most other VR software, you know, short of like a Half-Life Alyx or a Skyrim VR, is going for. So I think that this guy's on point, and he's only a year out, and I would love to see this get funded.
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel very much like this is one of those games where you look at it and you ask yourself, why hasn't this been done before? It almost addresses a fundamental, I don't want to say issue, but definitely a fundamental shortcoming of the VR platform, and does it in a very unique and interesting way. It is in this moment that I kind of wish that I had a VR headset so that I could try this out. I would love to play this game with Mrs. the Mac. I would love for her to, you know, for her and I to do this together. I mean, I think some things could definitely be improved a bit by it. Like, I think the graphics look a touch rough, but there's a lot that you can, you know, there's a lot you can improve in a year. And with some Kickstarter backing so that you don't have to be dividing your time between working on the game and working, you know, and working at a job, can certainly help speed that along.
And one other thing, if you don't mind, I like that this was part of his master's thesis. Like, if you're working on a master's degree and you get to the point that you're working on your thesis, it's not a joke. Like, it's pretty serious. You know, you're staying up late, you're working on this, you want to get a good grade. It's all on the line, all the work you've put towards this degree. So I can only imagine that he put a lot of effort, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into perfecting this before he started asking for money. And usually I'm kind of critical of people when they only ask for $10,000, you know, $12,000 for Kickstarters, and they're still a year out, because I'm like, how are you even going to pay yourself out of that money for a year's worth of work? But at this point, he's already been working on it as a means of getting a degree, and so I think that he's right on point with this.
True. Also, it is important to know that that he does say, you know, he does introduce himself that he's a solo dev and VR enthusiast, but he does say that he's going to be assembling a team. The demo was created entirely by me, but now I really need some help to finish everything and make it look neat, which is why I'd love to work with these fine folks. And part of what this Kickstarter thing is making happen is being able to bring these other people on. A programming specialist, someone who specializes in environmental art, character art, concept art, and a sound and music person, bringing the team total up to 6 people. I will say that, you know, that $11,000, $12,000 is not a lot to keep a 6-person team afloat. But hopefully they don't need the full year, everyone working the whole time. Maybe that 12,000 will provide enough man hours for them to get it going. But I'm a little bit concerned about that, but nonetheless, I, you know, all reservations aside, I really feel like the vision is beautiful. And even if this means that it takes longer, I'd still be all for it, because it's a great concept. It addresses fundamental issues in a unique and positive and entertaining way. I'm ready to say, Mr. Nice Guy, an enthusiastic, unequivocal kickstart from me.
Yeah, I think that this should be kickstarted, and I just really like it. Now, full disclosure, Mac, I put a quote-unquote pre-order down on a VR headset in May. Yeah, knowing that it would take weeks and weeks and weeks for it to actually get to the point that I would actually get to pay for it and decide if I really want it. And I'm leaning towards doing it. So if and when I get that ability, dude, you got to make a trip out. You got to, like, you just come over here. I'll let you use it. Half-Life Alyx, I'll just shut the door. You do your thing for a little bit. And then we can do some co-op after that.
That is incredibly kind of you. And I will most certainly take you up on that.
But my vote is to kickstart, bottom line.
Excellent. I agree enthusiastically, and the overwhelming majority of those people who are here with us live have said that kickstart is the way to go. We have some detractions, we have some hesitation and some concern about this limiting the addressable market by limiting the game to VR, but I think it's definitely worth it. And, you know, if it is something that could probably be addressed and maybe patched later, if you were to, say, add the ability to, you know, just have two screens is what you would have to have, a minimum, to be able to do something like that. But maybe it's possible to work a, you know, to work an interface in order to make that happen.
Yeah.
But at the very least, I think for what it is, it's well worth my dollar. So kickstart, and the majority of us kickstart. That has been Kick or Kickstart. Thank you, everyone, for participating. And for those of you who are listening to this after the fact, just shout it out on your bus, on your commute, whatever. We are tallying the results from here.
Yeah. Shout out to this guy. I mean, one last thing, Mac. It's hard. I'd imagine it's hard to kickstart a VR game, because VR is just not as big as everything else. So props to him. I hope he makes it.
Yep, we certainly do. Good luck, Wolfgang. You have our support, sir.
Awesome. Well, we'll keep things moving with our next segment called Nerd Flex. A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the hosts with trivia questions here live on the air. Now, Mac, I don't have the chat pulled up, so everyone who's here live, if you have any trivia questions that you want to try to stump myself and Maction with, please, please, please type them in the chat now. Mac, if you see those questions come up, please let me know.
You got it. I absolutely will. And one last thing, don't forget that when we do those sound tests, we still have prizes up for you to win if you can correctly identify those. We have several of them. Go back, listen, try, though, train those gamer ears on those sounds and see if you can't place them, because I would very much love to give out some prizes.
That's exactly right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, our first question comes from our test bank of questions that we have that someone sent us. Mac, I think we can get this one.
Okay.
What is the first level called in GoldenEye for the N64?
It takes place on a dam.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, and I think that is the name of it. The thing I remember most is that at the end of the level, he, like, ties the rope to his leg and jumps off.
Yeah, he bungees.
Yeah,
I think it's the dam.
I think it's just dam, but I'm not sure. Well, you know what? We'll count it if there's a the or not. Because that's just a technicality. So we're in agreement then. Final answer.
Oh, hang on. Are we sure it's not called tutorial or something like that?
Yeah, that would be crazy if it was a trick question, but I'm pretty sure it's not. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's called damn.
I think you're right. So yeah, we're in agreement on that one.
All right, final answer. Damn, let's see. Boom, we got it right, Mac. It was damn. GoldenEye 64. Classic game, dude. I want that game back so much. At least I think I do.
Agreed. Well, I mean, GoldenEye Source, for example, you can play that. It's basically an upgraded version of it if you want to get the experience but still have some of the polish.
Have you tried GoldenEye Source at all? Just curious.
I haven't, but I've seen people play it, and it looks pretty nice.
Okay, I'll have to check it out. Everyone always tells me that when I say I want GoldenEye back, so...
I will say there's always this sense of relief that washes over me when we get the first of the, you know, set of questions right, because I'm just like, oh, thank goodness, we're not going to get clean swept.
It does happen sometimes, but rarely. We'll keep things moving with another question. Let's see what we got. Okay, and I have no idea what the answer is. This is a Square Enix question. What brawler was Square's first release on the PS2?
I only know of one PS2 game that is a brawler, and it's called God Hand.
Okay.
And the only reason I know that is I've never played it, but it's been kind of on my radar, and I'm pretty sure that it's made the list of, like, best games of, you know, somewhere on somebody's list of best games of all time. I tend to actually, like, I will go out and I will read your best games of all time list just to be like, oh, that's interesting. I'd never considered that. So,
just to see what they forgot.
Well, no, more to see, like, what kinds of games, because you're right, Mr. Nice Guy, I'm not the biggest fan of, like, sports games. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things that if I see a game that I wouldn't normally go for that shows up on a lot of people's lists, I'll usually make the detour to go try it, just because it's like, you know what? Sure, people say this is good, let's do it.
That's where I'm at with Bloodborne, dude. I have access to that game on PS Plus. Everyone says it's one of the best games of the generation, just haven't got around to it. I need to do it. But anyway, back to the question. So you said it's potentially God Hand. I don't know what brawler Square Enix made on PS2. I have absolutely no idea. So I'm just going to go with what you said.
Sure.
On this one.
Let's go for it.
Hand final answer.
Yep.
Nope, it was a game called The Bouncer.
The Bouncer?
Which I have never heard of. But I'm going to look it up later just because I don't know what that is.
Well, I've never heard of it either. I mean, but I guess it's
a thing.
PS2.
It's a thing, apparently. Well, cool. We'll move on to our last question of the week.
All right. Oh, this one comes to us from the chat, courtesy of Spenis.
Okay.
It is... When Bandai Namco's Soul Calibur 2 was released for console versions, each console it was released for got an exclusive guest character. Name the character that was given to each console. The consoles were GameCube, PS2, and Xbox. And I have absolutely no idea. However, I am going to hazard a guess that in the exclusive characters were probably... like characters that came from that console type of thing. So I don't know what we would get on Xbox, but like I could see PS2 including like the MIDI evil skeleton dude from PlayStation as the dude for the PS2. That I don't know what his name is, but the skeleton dude from MIDI evil.
This is hard because I don't think. Like, I feel like on GameCube, they would not allow a crossover between Super Smash Bros. Characters and Soul Calibur. Mm-hmm. But, like, the ones that make the most sense would be Marth and Roy.
Yeah, right?
From Smash Bros., you know, from, I believe, Fire Emblem being put in.
Yeah, but to be fair, it would be, you know, they would be their characters from Fire Emblem, not so much Smash.
Correct, yeah, exactly.
So I think I can agree with you on that. I say Marth... maybe Roy. I say the MIDI evil dude from PS2. And what would we get for Xbox?
Well, I mean, they wouldn't do something cheesy like Master Chief, because that just wouldn't fit. I honestly don't know, man. Xbox, that's tough. Because it's not as much... Like, I don't think there's any exclusive fighting games on Xbox.
Well, I mean, I know we've got, like, the Dead or Alive games, right?
They just have like random characters
but
in swimsuits.
I struggle to see how we would get one of those characters in there.
Yeah.
So I think we might have to just go with those two answers and take the L on this one.
I think we're taking the L. Let us know in the chat, Spenis, what the answer is. And that's been our Nerdflex. We'll read those answers as soon as we get them.
The guest characters were the Great Mighty Poo from Conker.
Stop
Bill
it. He's lying.
Xbox.
Don't listen to him.
Yeah.
He's trolling.
So the real answers. GameCube had Link.
Dang, I actually knew that. I just remembered.
PS2 had Hi-Chi Mishima. I'm going to ruin that. And from Tekken. And Xbox had Spawn.
Interesting.
On the Xbox thing. I never... Yep, clearly... Your kung fu is best. Our apologies.
Well done.
Yeah, well done. We'll take the L on that one, but at least we didn't get clean swept. So keep it up, people. Keep these tough questions coming. So last thing, we are going to talk a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
And so this one's going to be a short one because, as I said before, in July we were talking about the idea of basically how real is too real in video games. What are you basically going to get in trouble for if you put into your video game, and why? And we've done person, place, and thing, and now it's time for events. And the answer is, in general, most of history is kind of fair game. But the thing you have to be worried about is if you're actually doing history stuff on real, on real events, then if you are using real people, that could be difficult because you might wind up causing privacy, defamation, or misappropriation concerns when you are using your fiction that is involving real people or real events. In episode 147, two episodes ago, we talked about people's right of publicity and how that, and that winds up being a consideration here as well. And I wish that I had some cool, juicy legal stories to, or legal cases to share. And while I could share something that comes from, say, the early 1900s that was more about, like, like authorship and people actually writing or filming things based on a true story, those sorts of stuff. But we don't really have any of that yet that I could find in video games. Because, well, just because fiction's kind of already taken care of the ideas there. The only thing you need to be worried about, as far as I can tell, and again, remember, I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on a podcast, that you just need to be worried about, you know, privacy, defamation, or misappropriation. And we already know, thanks to episode 147, just how long those rights of publicity maintain. Some things, however, might be tasteless, like Ishmobile is pointing out in the chat. It would be, it could be a bit tasteless in some of the Wolfenstein games to include certain characters, but just because it's tasteless doesn't mean it is illegal. And sadly, that's something that we're reminded of every day. But that has just been a little bit of legalese, and sorry for the short one. Stay tuned next time around, where we're going to finish off the person, place, things, events with ideas and discuss those. So
awesome.
We'll catch you next time on Legalese. And that's our show, but before we go, you know how we like to share what we've been watching and playing, and we like for you to share with us the nerdy things you're into so that we know what to check out next. So, Mr. Nice Guy, what have you been into?
Dude, I've been into so much. So, I was talking earlier about how there are some games that I really was excited for, and I was like, okay, I'm going to purchase these on Nintendo Switch. You know, it's worth it because I like portable indies on Switch. Both of the games that I was really excited for ended up being on Xbox Game Pass. So I did not have to buy either of them. I was able to just hop on and download them. Going back to my point about how we're just really spoiled right now as gamers, the first one is Neon Abyss. I strongly recommend this game. And Mac, it's a Maction game. I want, if you don't mind, like I don't ever say, Mac, you have to do this, and I'm not saying that now, but I think you should watch a trailer or watch some gameplay of this Neon Abyss. It's a platformer roguelite. So, effectively, you're going on runs, you're getting different weapons, you're upgrading, and then every time you die, there's some permanent upgrades you keep, but you lose a lot of your stuff, and the goal is just to get through all the bosses. And so, I really have enjoyed playing this game so far. It's just a simple... someone else in the chat is agreeing with me that it's awesome. It's just a killer game. Like, the sound is good, the graphics are just, like, fun. It's just a great game, and I'm really, really enjoying it. The other one that I was really excited for was CrossCode, and that one ended up being available on Game Pass as well. So, super hyped for both of those, and then, you know, my usual stuff. I did some competitive Valorant this week, a little bit of Teamfight Tactics with my brother, and my sons are really, really getting into Zelda right now, so I've just been sitting and watching them play. And it's been good. Now, as far as what I have been watching, Mac, not nearly enough. I don't know if I mentioned last week that I watched Knives Out, but that's such a killer movie. Watched that. And then my... puns! Unintentional. And then, you know, I've just been watching a lot of YouTube stuff, man. Reading up on the Valve Index as I wait to see when more of them will be available. So that's it for me, Mac. How about you?
Oh, well, for me, I've been playing a little bit of Halo 3 from Master Chief Collection. Played some with my pal. Also played a little bit of Sunless Sea. It's a game that's been on my backlog for a while, so I've been making some progress on that one. I'll reserve judgment for later after I've put in more than a couple hours on it. And as for watching, I've been watching a little bit of What We Do in the Shadows, the FX television series. Love the show. Also been watching Star Trek, as always. The missus finished off The Office. She had not finished The Office before, but we finished it together. Always watching a little bit of Star Trek. So that's us. As for now, for our good friends here, those who are here with us live, thank you for letting us know what you're into. I'll take the playing. Spenis is playing Ghosts of Tsushima. The game is so good. Super Smash Bros. With Nice Guy. Yeah. Apparently his game is on point.
We played last week and we had a really good time with four of us. It was great.
Ishmobile's playing Halo Reach and Zelda Ocarina of Time. Yes, Water Temple, best temple. And finished Ghost of a Tale. That's what we've got so far in the chat.
Nice.
How about you for the watching?
Nice. Now, as far as what people are watching, he is watching, Ishmobile watched Knives Out as well, Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, and finished Galavant. Galvatron, let's see, oops, he's watching Hannibal on Netflix. He says, you must watch this show, it's incredible. Now, Galvatron, every time someone says that, they're probably right, but once again, we're so spoiled, you know. We have this fast food mentality when it comes to food and also when it comes to games and shows. We just have access to too much stuff, but I trust your judgment. He also says he's been watching The Office and Community. He says it's overrated, and Law & Order SVU. He said SUV, but I think he meant SVU.
I think so. I did once have a sister who was like, I mean, well, I still have a sister, but once my sister said, you know, I tried watching those Law & Order shows, but it was just all about the worst kinds of crimes, and I was just like, you know what, I wish they would do something other than all these terrible crimes. I'm like, which Law & Order show were you watching? And she was like, it was like SVU or something. That's Special Victims Unit! All that is the worst kinds of crimes. Yeah, there are like 20 other Law & Order shows. Watch any of them.
SVU is pretty dang disgusting. Girl says she is watching Milo Murphy's Law, Phineas and Ferb, Firefly,
yes,
Hamilton, The Expanse, and she also watched Knives Out.
Wonderful, wonderful list there. And I did miss Galvatron's playing Nioh 2, Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, Ghost Sushi, and Mario Kart 8. Maybe one of these days, Galvatron, I'll tell you the tale of dodging a blue turtle shell back in the old days. But sadly, that story will have to wait for another time. Thanks everybody for coming out. Y'all are awesome. Best viewers on Twitch, best listeners on any podcast platform.
Vote for us, right, Mac?
Yes, that's right. Vote for us in the Podcast Awards. The People's Choice Podcast Awards, if you just go to podcastawards.com. Vote for us in gaming and hobbies. Vote for Service Desk Podcast in Technology. We don't have to be the most popular podcast to win this. We just need to be in the top 10 so that the full panel reviews and sees how bright our star shines. So get us there. Get us into the top 10. Share with your friends, family, and otherwise. And there's even an intro episode that we threw together that's on the feed there that you can show and be like, hey, you're into games. This is that. You guys need to be doing at least as much effort pushing Two Nerds in a Pod as I do.
That's enough ranting. We love y'all.
See ya, everybody.
Bye.